Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 26th of July, recording at 8 p.m. British Standard Time. That's 1 hour before the Wall Street close. And this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's just have a very quick review of the week. Stock markets have rolled over for the most part after becoming overbought in the short term. So we've seen some selling pressure. Long-dated government bond yields have been ranging overall in what looks like a consolidation following their strong gains since last May. U.S. dollar is weakened in here again this week, pulling back within its overall range, and that has some of the other, well, inevitably some of the other currencies are quite steady. The euro at 132.82, the Australian dollar 0.9262 against the U.S. Sterling up to 153.87, but basically we're there overall in a ranging environment. And commodities, generally soft. We've seen the continuous commodity index be pushed down once again today. Just going to put that up to see exactly where it is. And it's currently at 509.48. Okay, that's down 5 points in here today. It is in an overall downward trend. It did see quite a good rally, the best rally since the beginning of the year. And it did that from its it did it from the support near the 500 level, which was also an important low that we commented on at some length back in June of 2012. So the key question is, will this low actually hold? Well, on the weekly chart, we have a small downside key reversal. And I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't bet on that 500 level holding. I think we could see these commodities push a little lower. Now, clearly there are still some disinflationary, deflationary pressures, and also an exodus of funds from those sectors. Okay, now, as this is the big picture long-term outlook, what can we say first about global stock markets? And obviously the background has been one of a bull market for just about everything except the mining sectors. And we have had particularly strong gains over the last, it's over 4.5 years here for Wall Street, some of the Asian markets, particularly the so-called Little Tiger ASEAN indices. That's like Thailand, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Indonesia. but Owen and I have been mentioning for a while that we were moving into a more difficult period. First, that excellent rally since last November was another strong upward leg for the overall bull market. It took valuations up quite a bit. So they're actually quite pricey, and in terms of Wall Street, they're back at the same levels that they were in 2007. Although, as I've said previously, I don't see anything on the horizon that can match 2000 and eight. But we do know that global GDP growth is still quite slow. The anxiety over that has been compounded by China's restructuring that's taking place in terms of government priorities and policies at the beginning of this new decennial term. And therefore, the strong rally that we've seen in stock markets has been largely fueled by the low interest rates and very substantial tailwind in terms of monetary policy coming from all the quantitative easing from the United States and other central banks, not least Japan, and also in a different format or version from Europe as well. And then there are plenty of other individual central banks that have been maintaining very accommodative monetary policies. So stock markets have floated upwards above this well of financial liquidity. And as subscribers will recall, most likely, fuller money, we've long said that monetary policy is by far the most fundamental, the most important fundamental economic indicator for stock markets. Okay, so the liquidity is still there, the quantitative easing continues, but it's not going to go on indefinitely, and there are calls by at least half the Fed governors, the U.S. Fed governors, for a reduction in the quantitative easing. And in addition to that, with the slower global GDP growth that's actually taking place, while corporate profits have continued to do well for the most part, not least for the autonomies, the corporate autonomies that we like so much, but the corporate profits growth has been slowing. And I think that is a risk here against the background of these valuations. So you weigh up these factors, and overpriced markets, not horrendously expensive, but expensive enough so that I certainly wouldn't want to be chasing rallies in this environment by some of these high-flying shares. Slow growth, corporate profits, the rate of growth for corporate profits is shrinking. And that's a difficult environment. In some countries, you have tax problems that are a headwind as well. The United States, not least. So we're of the view at Fuller Money that we're most likely going to see a lengthy medium-term period of a relatively choppy, ranging market environment overall. And inevitably, we will see some downward moves that may reach that statistical level of a bear market, which people use when they talk about a decline of over 20%, for some of the high-flying and fast-dropping, when they're reacting, more speculative emerging market indices, share indices, 20% is nothing overall. So I think we'll have that choppy environment, maybe some small statistical and bear markets over the next few years. But I don't think there are any grounds that we can see today, at least, for another big hit to the downside, which investors have worried about for so many years. And I go back to my comment, did those two really savage bear markets that we saw in 2000 and also 2008. I talked about this point subsequently and said, did the fact that those two big bear markets occurred at that time, did it make it more likely or less likely that we would see another one of that magnitude? Well, after 2008, of course, there was plenty of bearish sentiment around looking for a further market collapse, but our opinion, fortunately, we felt that those two very big shakeouts certainly greatly lowered the risk that we would see a third anytime soon, not least because governments have been so responsive in terms of their monetary policy overall. But I get back to the key point for the lengthy medium term. I think we're likely to see a somewhat volatile, primarily ranging period overall, in which we'll see some sharp falls and some sharp gains. Now, that's not all that bad an environment by any means, particularly compared to some of the bearish forecasts that we heard from people all that not all that long ago, including around last November when the rally was starting. But I think in terms of tactics, it will be important that if you want to buy on weakness following some of the shakeouts when people are starting to get nervous, and if you are an active manager, you want to be lightening when you're starting to see overextensions relative to the 200-day moving averages. And that's a strategy that I would advise. And I also think for some long-term investors who are holding quality shares with a decent yield still and growth prospects overall, that one can ride this out here. And looking considerably further down the road, and of course, I can only guess about those prospects, just like everyone else. But having had this long valuation contraction cycle, which has ended with this rather strong rally since November, I think we're in several for these, as I say, these several years of ranging, but then moving on to a secular bull market, another secular bull market. And the last big secular bull market was really between 1982 and sort of 1999 for most stock markets. Now, factors that would help to fuel another secular bull market, in my opinion, would be cheaper energy in real terms as the fracking spreads. I'll be a lot happier when that spreads a little bit more rapidly. But it's not going to decrease, and it is increasing. And they, with the other green sources of energy that are available, albeit very expensive for the most part, but even those costs will be coming down, particularly for solar. And solar is by far the most important of those alternative energy sources. In my opinion, that as we get towards the end of this decade and into the next decade, I think there's a good real chance that energy costs will be cheaper in real, in other words, inflation-adjusted terms than they are today. And that would be a positive driver for global GDP growth. I also think that another bullish factor overall will be the accelerated rate of technological innovation that's actually taking place. And that's hugely important. Consumers, and particularly corporations, are the main beneficiaries of that accelerated technological development. The main losers, unfortunately, are in terms of the employment stakes, because automation continues to replace an increasing number of jobs. And I think that's a trend that is really going to continue really for quite a long time. I don't have any doubt that new jobs will be created for people, but possibly and probably not fast enough to keep up with the rate at which those jobs are being lost during this technological innovation. But overall, that innovation is good for global GDP growth generally. And then I think other factors would be largely due to behind a secular bull market, It would be due to the fact that capitalism really has won the debate in terms of economic policies, and so many countries around the world are now experiencing growth that would have previously been undreamt of. Even during this relatively difficult economic period, and the rise of the global middle class, these are all factors that will increase corporate profits, not least for the global autonomies that we like so much here at Fuller Money. So, moving on to the long-dated government bond markets, quite the opposite picture here overall. It's been a spectacular bull market of over 30 years in terms of long-dated government bonds, but it has ended, in our opinion, and we are in the early stages of base development, moving towards base formation completion. And when we next see global GDP growth picking up and fears of recession and fears of disinflation or deflation, when those are no longer present, we can be quite certain that interest rates are going to be considerably higher than they are today. And there's also a risk. I don't think it's a certainty, but I'll mention the risk that when we do get back to that strengthening global economy overall, that we will see some inflation pressures increasing, and that would also push those interest rates higher as well. But the big outlook for government bonds is for a secular bear market. It may start relatively slowly, but following a secular bull market in any sector, you do see, and in secular by that I mean, of course, in very long term, you'll get, I'm talking about a move of a generation and sometimes more, then secular bulls follow secular bears and vice versa. So I think there are a lot of risks, a lot of medium and the longer term risks in these long dated government bond markets, and interest rates will go up. There'll be some obvious advantages from the higher interest rates, not least for savers, and everybody will feel better when we get back into that normal economic environment. I would guess that we're between 1 to 3, possibly, years away from being in that state. I've often mentioned the fact that following a credit crisis recession, and of course not every country experienced a credit crisis recession, but the US, Europe, Japan, all the developed economies, we could say, have certainly experienced that, and some of the developing economies. But the historic data shows that it takes at least 5 to 7 years before you get back to a normal environment following those difficult recessions. It's not hard to understand why, because a lot of money is lost. Consumers are under pressure. Corporations are much more conservative. Governments have deficits, so on. Now, that 5 to 7 year, then I would say at least 5 to 7 years, that figure is not based on my own research, but it's based on some very good academic research that I've read and that you've probably read as well on this subject. So again, projection would be the best case. We see more economies coming out of this in the next year, but more likely it's going to be 3 to 4 years before we get back to that more normal environment overall. And moving on to currencies, at Fuller Money, we maintain that the US dollar is in a overall base building phase here against most other currencies. And I can say that having watched the dollar weaken for most of my professional career, and if you look at the really long-term charts, which of course you can in the chart library, you can see how much the US dollar did come down against so many other currencies. And you can also see the clear evidence of base formation activity that's taking place. I've said on many occasions that it takes several years for these very big secular changes in the US dollar. And my feeling is that the dollar will be probably in an overall upward trend when the global economy is getting back to something like a normal environment. Now, that means that we have most likely a few more years to go in that base formation development, but not all currencies will move at the same time against the US dollar. So we need to identify the and we'll of course be able to use the charts and other data to identify the leaders and laggards in that respect. But the long-term outlook is for an appreciating dollar, and the drivers there would be the competitive energy that the US has. They would also be its big technology lead, and also the fact that the United States has by far the most of these corporate autonomies. And that's a very significant bull story for the medium to longer term. Among other currency developments here, we see the controlled weakening of the Japanese yen. Actually, the yen is strengthened in here over the last few days. It's 98. That might put a little bit more pressure on Japan, on Japan's stock market here in the short term. But I would expect the yen to weaken further against the U.S. dollar over the next few years. And that will be reflected in some intentional weakening of a number of the Asian currencies, the other Asian currencies, I should say, particularly, for instance, ASEAN Asian currencies over the next few years, because Japan's recovery is obviously, and the Japan and Japan's weaker yen. Can put those other Asian currencies at a competitive disadvantage. So again, that's another bull story. If you look at it the other way around, another bull story for the US dollar. And incidentally, I did not mention this in my earlier comments on stock markets, but the Japanese stock market, I think, is while it's in a short-term corrective phase here right now, I'd be surprised if that took out the last reaction low that we saw a couple of months ago. And I do think that it's a very good candidate for further stock market appreciation over the medium and possibly longer term. And the big driver there right now is, of course, you have an administration that is hell-bent on breaking this long deflationary slide that Japan has seen for over 20 years. And so that's a very, very positive a government approach for Japan's stock market. In contrast, you look at the United States, and while the United States has those special characteristics that I mentioned of the cheaper energy costs, the technology lead, and also the autonomies. But the current government is more redistributive, and is something of a headwind as far as the actual stock market is concerned. Now, going back to the currencies that I was talking about, I think that mostly covers the picture. I haven't commented on sterling and on the euro, but they will probably continue to range against the US dollar, although there is a case for a softer euro in here. I think it's a stronger case for a softer euro than for stronger. I beg your pardon. It's a strong case for a softer euro than it is for a softer pound. I think the pound is unlikely to appreciate that much against the US dollar, but the pound will probably outperform the euro and a number of other currencies over the next few years. It's good to see the UK economic recovery that's actually taking place, beginning to take place here right now, because it's been a struggle. And Chancellor of the Exchequer George Osborne, I think he's a very capable guy. I think he has a lot of integrity, but he's taken a lot of flack. I don't think it's deserved. I'll be posting an article that he wrote for the Times in London here today, which may interest you. Now, going on to the commodity markets, and let's start with the precious metals here first. On a short-term basis, palladium looks like a bit of a sell. It's been overextended on the upside and is likely to give up some of those gains. It has been a significant bearish move for the other precious metals, and that's platinum, silver. Silver's fallen most of all, and also gold, which has seen a significant downward move. Stale bull liquidation has been a factor in there. When you have all those investors piling into gold and silver ETFs, well, that's absolutely great during the bullish phase. It helps to drive those markets higher as more and more liquidity moves in to snap up the metal. But of course, when the bearish cycles take place, then you get the long unwind, and that's what we have been experiencing. Although gold has seen a pretty good rally recently, and that raises the question in my mind and just about everybody else's mind, have we seen a significant low? The low that we have seen here was down at $1,180, and that was on the 28th of June, as you may recall. And here we have gold at 1330 here right now. So it's been quite a good bounce, and it's been strong enough to make me feel that there's a reasonable chance that is that June low that I mentioned, end of June low, is probably the beginning of a bottoming out process overall. Now, you'll be aware, and I'm certainly aware, that there are plenty of people saying that, well, no, gold's going to go to $1,000, and no, gold's going to go to $800, and some people are even saying that gold's going to go down to $500. Well, that's what one expects in a bear market. That tells us that people have gotten out. That tells us that people are short. People who got out of long positions almost certainly did so with some profit erosion, as many of us experienced. Veteran subscribers, we've been riding that bull market since the early 2000s. You give up some at the very end. And that's what happened, and gold continued to move down. But now, as I say, those bearish forecasts I would regard as very much a contrary indicator. And just as when gold was moving higher, there were all kinds of forecasts for it on the upside, and some of them involving many, many thousands of dollars. And I mean, it's just a one forecast. I think gold going to $8,000 and so on. And that's what you tend to get in the latter stage of an overall bull market environment. Now, is the secular bull, I ask, is the secular bull in gold over? Now, well, certainly the cyclical bull that we had been seeing is has was ended by the decline that we have seen. But if you look historically at these cycles, that there's some evidence that gold really is I'm seeing a cyclical, beg your pardon, a cyclical bear. That's what we've been seeing. Really, since its peak, and that is occurring within the overall secular bull market for gold that started earlier in the last decade. Now, we can only guess as to this. Obviously, nobody knows the answer to that for sure, but I think it's quite possible. All the quantitative easing that we've seen, the devaluation and that we've seen in terms of our purchasing, the purchasing power of our currencies. You know, I know all the government statistics say, well, there's very little inflation, if any, and that this is a deflationary environment. But consumers in every country know that there's actually plenty of inflation, and I'm sure you're aware of that as well. So I think that's a long-term tailwind for gold gold bullion. But what I'm looking for here in the near term is additional evidence that we are now in a support building, base building process for gold. And that would require a retest of those lows that and seeing them hold, and that will take a little bit of time, of course, for that to occur. But I'm cautiously optimistic. I would put it at this stage, but I think it would be premature to take an aggressive move into the market. Industrial metals have been hammered, as you know, and that has certainly driven down the mining shares very considerably. I think the industrial metals are quite cheap overall, but again, it's going to take more time, and particularly with all the uncertainty around China. I think what China is doing today is going to be bullish for the longer term, but China will probably won't be consuming metals at the same rate as it did a few years ago or before the 2008 blowout. But there's going to be there will certainly be plenty of other countries that will be consuming in industrial metals. So I think that we're probably not too far away from a floor area, but we may not be there yet. Or if we are, that it'll require further base building, and that can sometimes be a lengthy process, as you know. In terms of oil prices, they're crucial. Oil has weakened somewhat here in the short term. I was concerned about that sharp run-up that we saw in the WTI. That's the U.S. contract, that West Texas Intermediate. But it is falling back. It's currently at 104.68. I would like to see it go back below the level of 100, as I've said before, and stay down there. I think that will happen. I think the move to the upside was largely technical. It was not followed by a similar move in the price of the Brent contract. But we're still in this tight environment here in terms of oil prices, and we need more pumping of shale, as I said much earlier on in this broadcast. Shale oil and shale gas. And we need the renewal developments and hopefully also some new generation nuclear. The old generation nuclear is dangerous and risky and needs to be replaced. But I think we need all available energy sources in here, and that would help to create, of course, the lower costs of energy that I expect by the end of this decade, if not sooner. That's a very conservative forecast when I said by the end of this decade. But I do feel there's a good chance that oil prices, the highs that they saw back, and you think back in 2007 and early 2008, there's a good chance that we will not see those levels tested, at least not in real terms here. But if I'm wrong and oil prices move up significantly for whatever reason, then that will obviously cause problems for global GDP growth. On the other hand, if we see oil prices ranging erratically lower over time, that will certainly turn from a headwind into another tailwind for global GDP growth. It's an interesting outlook. And also, thank heavens for the generally favorable weather that we're seeing this year in terms of crops. Overall, it looks like that's going to enable buffer stocks to be built up against after a number of difficult years in terms of those prices. And on that note, folks, I don't want to run on forever in this, so I'll just say thank you for your interest and all the very best to all of you. Have a fantastic weekend.